You've heard the headlines. Get some perspective now with Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Hey, and a good morning to you. A happy Tuesday. Just for Jamie West, right? We're going to start off by talking about the gubernatorial debate.
Yeah. All right.
The Lead. Brought to you by Burge Ford, off the U.S. 60 and Mesa Drive.
Well, the candidates for governor squared off last night in the first of two scheduled debates. Arizona Republican Governor Doug Ducey, Democratic challenger David Garcia, and Green Party candidate Angel Torres all took to the stage to answer questions, but most of the focus was on Ducey and Garcia sparring over the hot-button topic of education. Garcia says our education system remains in crisis, and Ducey says he can be held accountable for the last 3+ years, not the last 20.
To be clear, Jamie West says only talk show hosts use the term gubernatorial.
Is that why you're referencing that?
Yeah. Mm. I'm just happy that I can pronounce it.
There you go.
So
not stumble over it.
I try to use words that I can pronounce on a regular basis, even if I'm using them improperly. So
in this case, you're using it correctly.
I am. Shockingly enough, even a blind squirrel finds a nut. The debate was last night, and education is a hot button topic, but you'd expect that because the Democratic challenger, David Garcia, I mean, that is his issue, right?
That is his issue. Yes, he has been part of the education fabric, I guess you could say, here in the state for quite some time. He is an education professor at Arizona State University and repeatedly called Governor Doug Ducey a follower rather than a leader in terms of education.
Our teachers are walking out and they understand that what has been done so far is not enough.
Okay, so he's saying what's happened so far, not enough. But Governor Ducey coming back with, hey, I got a 20 by 20 plan.
We're going to have a 20% pay increase for our teachers by school year 2020. I think a lot of people would say that's a pretty good start. And that's what we've been able to accomplish. And people are saying it's not enough. And I agree with them.
You're welcome. Every time he says things, that's what I hear him say. You're welcome, Governor Ducey. Educate. You guys are welcome. 20 by 2020. Thank you. You're welcome. The latest polling, and by the way, I have 5 polls all conducted in the last 3 weeks.
Oh, okay. What do they say?
And looking at the average, again, if you're interested in this type of thing, I look at Real Clear Politics is the website. You can go to Arizona Governor and you just look at the average of the polls. Has Ducey +6.
Ooh,
the
okay.
Best poll has Ducey up by 11. The quote unquote worst one would have Ducey up by 4. No polls has Garcia leading, but the average of all polls has Ducey at 6 percentage points outside the margin of error when you're looking at these things. And I don't know if I heard or saw anything last night that would fundamentally change the trajectory of this race. I still think it's Ducey's to lose, as in he would have to do something really bizarre.
Okay, but let's talk about that then. So Real Clear Politics, as you just said there, has Ducey +6 outside mm-hmm. the margin of error.
Yeah.
Okay. And nothing in the debate last night did either one of us see that I feel would sway people one way or another. If you like Ducey, you still like him this morning. If you like Garcia, you still like him this morning.
Is it fair to say that when it comes to debates, not just governor's debates, but any of them, it's not that you read your talking points well. They all do that. They're coached for it. You have to have a gap. You have to do something to hurt yourself at a debate.
Okay, but
like, remember the governor of Texas?
That was the presidential race.
My point plan, and he couldn't remember the points and all that. I mean, you have to do something stupid on stage.
And nobody did anything stupid.
Correct.
And I really wouldn't expect any of these candidates to do anything stupid. So, by that barometer, by that baseline then, Bruce, are you saying that nothing can really change in order for this race to swing?
Yeah, I think that if you're looking at it strategy-wise.
Really strategy-wise.
Ducey has blunted Garcia's education message.
It's pretty amazing.
Every time Garcia starts talking about education, Doug Ducey says, 20 by 2020, you're welcome. You guys are welcome. No, seriously, hold your applause. You teachers that got a raise, you're welcome. Yep. Education governor right here.
Yeah, I don't know if I can necessarily hang my hat on the moniker of the education governor.
That's his speech, and his speech works.
The speech does work. And yes, I think that Governor Ducey did himself some favors by coming to some sort of compromise for educators in the wake of the Red for Ed movement. But I mean,
he knows how to read polls.
Yeah, of course he knows how to read polls. But what you're looking at right now is, you know, the reaction. I don't want to say the fallout, but the reaction from the massive Red for Ed teacher walkout. Also, the contentious fight to knock the Invest in Ed income tax measure off the November ballot. And so, frankly, right now, I am a bit surprised that Ducey is plus six in Real Clear Politics. I expect him to be up. I most definitely expect him to be up. Yeah, he's an incumbent Republican governor in a red state.
In Arizona.
Yeah.
And he won his last election 4 years ago by almost 12 points.
So I would expect him to be up.
Mm-hmm.
But in this climate, with education being such a hot button topic, I'm a little surprised he's up that much.
But are you? Again, getting back to my point.
Yes, I am.
But he is talking about education.
You can talk about
it. He's talking
don't
about
it. Don't talk about it. Be about it, man.
20 for 20.
Is
20
he
by
it?
2020.
Okay.
You're welcome.
20 by 2020.
You're welcome.
And there was some...
Hey, we got teachers a raise. Got you guys a raise. You're welcome, all you teachers. Doug Ducey, you guys are welcome. No need to thank me. Seriously, it's good.
But those that follow this issue in this state, beyond the just headlines of teachers getting a pay raise,
you're
know
welcome.
That there's so much more to this issue. And that is why I'm a little surprised at the number.
Mm-hmm.
Not that he's leading, but that he's leading by six in the average of all the polls. Because, you know, you saw 50,000 educators march through the streets of downtown Phoenix, all wearing their red shirts and holding signs, remember, in November. We have so many people running for office here in the state of Arizona who are current or former educators. They've been motivated to come out and partake in this midterm election. So I would expect them to be up, just not that much.
I think here is the demographic issue that Ducey understands and Garcia is fighting against.
What's that?
The people that you just described, the 50,000 who marched, they still have Red for Ed on their cars. They were already on the Garcia side.
I don't know.
They were already headed down that path. They already blamed Ducey or Republicans or whatever for underfunding education for however many decades you want to claim it's been done in Arizona, and I'm not even going to argue that.
Okay.
The people who don't, Garcia hasn't given them enough of a difference to change their mind. They're saying, well, Doug Ducey's doing it.
Okay, that you may be on with to something that I might be able to agree with, that maybe Garcia hasn't given them enough. Because, fair point, and I concede that, yes, if you were marching in April and May in 100 plus degree heat, chances are you weren't going to vote for a Republican governor.
Counted in the polls is not one of his guys.
I'm not going to say all, because I know that, I mean, the idea that all educators are Democrats is a farce. Okay, it just flat out is. What I'm talking about are the parents who have children in the public education system, who believe that their school is a good school, but were maybe a little unaware of just maybe some of the challenges that are going on within their districts. And now that that's been brought to light, how do those parents vote? Do they feel as though Governor Ducey has been doing a good job, or do they feel as though they need a bit of a change? So we want to ask you on the open mic line, 602-200-2733. Who do you think won the debate last night?
Oh, okay.
And was your mind changed at all? Because I think that that's probably the bigger question. Did any of the candidates sway you one way or another? And if so, we'd love to know why. 602-200-2733. Or have the decisions already been made up? Or, you know, Bruce's points here. 602-200-2733. Open mic line brought to you by Carol Royce with Keller Williams Realty East Valley.
The lead brought to you by Burge Ford off the US 60 in Mesa Drive. Online at burgeford.com. A new report comes out that maybe shows exactly how deep a hole Arizona is in. And you know, this is one of these difficult things. How do all these things exist at the same time? Arizona getting a failing grade in almost every single category. Yet, the people who have been in charge of education in this state still aren't held accountable. And by the way, I think they still won't be. We'll tell you about the new Wallet Hub survey and just how deep the hole Arizona is in.
Let's kick it.
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
It is a National One-Hit Wonder Day.
Oh, I'm like, why are we playing Vanilla
All
Ice?
All morning long, we'll be playing One-Hit Wonders.
Something grabs a hold of me.
So I used to play a game, and I won't make you do it.
Yo.
So the One-Hit Wonders is everybody, you know, you can name them.
To the extreme, I rock my
can you name the follow-up single that made Vanilla Ice a One-Hit Wonder?
No. No.
My guess would be Rolling in My 5.0, but I'm not 100% sure. I'd have to double check on that one. Yeah. So we'll be playing One Hit Wonders all morning long.
Check out.
Little Robbie Van Winkle. I went to his house. It's a long story. Anyway, education. Many voters. It's number one or number two on a majority of Arizonans' priority list, at least when they're looking at politics, voting in the upcoming election. But we have a new report about just, I'll use the term, Pamela, how deep the hole is that Arizona education is in.
Yeah, and I think that that's probably the big headline, the big takeaway from this, Bruce, because we just got done talking about Governor Doug Ducey and the 20 by 2020 plan. And hey, you like you always like to say, you're welcome.
You're welcome.
But when you look at 20 by 2020, it just nearly dents the surface with how far we have dug ourselves into a hole in education funding in the state of Arizona. How far is that hole dug? Well, let me tell you. Wallet Hub analyzed 50 states plus District of Columbia. So we got 51 here.
Yay!
They had some 22.
So we're ranking out of 51. Keep that in mind, those of you that know there's 50 states.
That's important, yes. Even though I did go to public education, you know, I could still know that there's 50 states. Okay. 22 key metrics. And they took a look, you know, things like teachers' income, growth potential, you know, student-teacher ratio, you know, all that kind of stuff. Where did Arizona rank? Well, we are last when it comes in teacher salary changes over the last 10 years. Hey, Bruce, what happened 10 years ago?
Was that the bottom fell out of the economic downturn,
the recession,
whatever you want to call
and
it?
And that is when
we made huge cuts.
Yeah, lawmakers made huge cuts.
Yeah.
And they've never restored that funding, hence the reason why the hole that we've dug is so deep.
And they've all been reelected, by the way.
Well, not all. But enough. I think that this election is going to bear that out. Yeah. I don't know. When it came towards student-teacher ratio, how many kids per teacher in a classroom? Well, we're also towards the bottom on that one.
Oh, boy.
As well as in public school spending per student and quality of the school system as a whole.
Yeah. Decidedly some challenges, and some challenges that even... And I want to make sure that I'm not cheering for Doug Ducey when he says 20 by 2020, you're welcome. That is my snarky way of making fun of it. Even with these changes, we don't exactly rocket up the charts, Pamela. Do you know what I mean? Even with the projected increases, even with the changes in education, more money for schools, more of this, that, and the other, like we start creeping up to like our best case scenario is, hey, we're 48th instead of 50.
Yeah.
Because we are so far behind, and I will acknowledge this. I can just look at the problem. I can't tell you the solution. We are so far behind that if you were talking about like 10, 15% increases overall in all of these metrics, it still wouldn't get us out of the bottom 10.
And that's what's sad, because when Wallet Hub took a look at the best states for teachers, and when I see best states for teachers, what I hear, where do teachers want to work? What has the best environment for them to work? Where are they the most supported? Where is there going to be financial stability? Where are there the resources in order them to effectively do their job?
Mm-hmm.
So what are the best states for teachers? Arizona comes in 50th on the list.
Again, out of 51. I just want to point out we didn't finish dead last.
Top five.
I'm ready.
Let's go from five to one.
Okay, counting them down.
Coming in at number five, North Dakota.
North Dakota.
4, Illinois.
Illinois.
3, Minnesota.
Got it.
2, Connecticut.
Connecticut.
And 1, New York.
All right.
All right. So those are your top 5. Your bottom 5, 51, Hawaii. 50th, Arizona. 49th, North Carolina. 48th, Louisiana. And 47th, Florida.
And again, a lot of metrics go into this. They you know, to come up with these numbers.
Okay.
Again, they're looking for salaries, cost of living, teacher turnover, student pupil teacher ratio, stuff like that.
Okay, so you know what, we can talk about the 22 different metrics that Wallet Hub looked at.
Right.
But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, we've got a midterm election coming up. And you just said a few moments ago, Bruce, that you know what, all those state lawmakers that have slashed funding, well, they're
for
still there.
For the last 20 years, yeah, okay. They've been there for a while.
And I know that we've got a lot of educators who are running this time around. We know that education has always been a big issue in this state, but I think it is like the issue between one or two,
yeah.
you know, right now.
We know
now.
That and immigration are the big ones.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree.
So I want to ask our listeners, because we've got a sophisticated audience.
Ooh.
I want to ask you, who's responsible for this ranking? When I say that Arizona is 50th,
we're number 50.
When it comes to best states for teachers.
They don't make big foam fingers with that one.
Who's responsible for this ranking? Is it our state lawmakers?
Mm-hmm.
Is it voters?
Is it the governor?
Is it the schools? Is it parents? Who do you hold responsible, or who do you blame, for Arizona being 50th for best states for teachers? 602-200-2733. 602-200-2733. It's our open mic line. Who's responsible for this horrible ranking?
I tweeted the story, so you can look at the whole Wallet Hub survey. It's very interactive. I tweeted it at Bruce St. James, so you can check it out yourself and see exactly how and why we ended up where we did. Judge Brett Kavanaugh spoke kind of publicly for the first time since a variety of accusations. We'll play for you what he had to say and, well, how believable was he? That's coming up next.
A little bit of Monica in my life.
KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Can we acknowledge on National One Hit Wonder Day that we're happy there wasn't a follow-up to this song?
Oh.
Can we acknowledge that this was enough? Right?
A little bit of you makes me your man. We all know the words to them. I do. The cheesy
One
Hit Wonders.
Big hits there. It's
goodness.
All morning long, we'll be playing the big One Hit Wonders of the last, 20, 30, 40 years. Judge Brett Kavanaugh spoke last night, really for the first time, kind of a public, outside of the hearings, I guess I should say, an interview situation. Although, well, I'm going to start by saying he goes to Fox News, where he's going to get a softball, pretty much.
He's not going to go to MSNBC.
Well, what does that say about his belief? Again, a whole other argument in and of itself that he's going to go and defend himself in a place that already believes him, for lack of better terms. But he did go and answer questions regarding a variety of these accusations that are being made against him.
All right. So right out of the gate, you know what? He was somewhat strong saying this.
I'm not perfect, but I've never, never done anything like this.
Okay, I've never done anything like this. Okay, fine. Brett Kavanaugh started answering questions regarding allegations against him, not only from Christine Blasey Ford, but also from Deborah Ramirez. Now, the Deborah Ramirez alleged incident took place in Yale, and this is where I think Judge Kavanaugh's story can start to unravel. And I think that this is where he may have done himself a bit of disservice going out on national television and having this conversation.
Oh, okay.
Take a listen.
I never did any such thing. Never did any such thing. The other people alleged to be there don't recall any such thing. If such a thing had happened, it would have been the talk of campus.
Okay, actually, Judge Kavanaugh, apparently it was the talk on campus, because if you read the New Yorker article, they cited multiple students who talked about hearing about this incident secondhand. Okay, they weren't there, so I will be fair and say that.
But he's the one that brought up the talk of campus.
Sure, sure. And in fact, His roommate at the time is on the record saying that the Ramirez claim is credible and consistent with Kavanaugh's behavior. His roommate said that Kavanaugh was a, quote, notably heavy drinker, even by the standards of the time, and that he became aggressive and belligerent when he was drunk. So that statement right there, I mean, part of the credibility of the article came from the other people who were able to independently tell roughly the same story as Deborah Ramirez, not knowing that they had spoken to her.
There appear to be, I'm going to call them inconsistencies.
With whose story?
With the image that Brett Kavanaugh is projecting, at least on Fox News, with some of the stories and some of his own comments that have surfaced. So Brett Kavanaugh admits nothing like this ever happened. It got awkward at times. He admitted to being a virgin through high school and into college.
Okay, yeah. The fact that we are now at a point in time in this country where we have a Supreme Court nominee who's on Fox News talking about when he lost his virginity.
Right.
Can we just back up a second here, folks? My goodness.
Understood. Having said that, the yearbook for the Georgetown Prep, there are notations, comments, writings, quotations in it that certainly don't make it come across that he's quite the choir boy he's painting himself to be.
But yet he still paints himself as that choir boy.
The women I knew in college and the men I knew in college says it's inconceivable that I could have done such a thing. And the New York Times has reported that just last week, the person making the accusation was calling other classmates saying she was not sure that I had done this.
Yeah, and she was not sure if she had done this. But also, Brett Kavanaugh was talking about how everybody thought that, you know, he was a great guy and that he has stood up for women ever since he was 14 years old. He wanted to clear his name and have this fair process.
Yeah. So it wasn't me. I didn't act like this. That isn't the type of person I was. I was a virgin, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So in the yearbook, do you remember right when the allegations came out, there was 64 women that signed a letter saying that Brett Kavanaugh always treated them with respect and they knew him their whole lives.
And
he
referenced that a couple times in this interview.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there's some women on that list now who've asked to have their names taken off of it due to new revelations. That isn't a good thing in and of itself, is it?
What do you mean?
One of these women, her name is Renate Schroeder Dolphin. That is her name. Let's go with Renate Dolphin.
Okay.
She attended a nearby Catholic high school that was adjacent to Georgetown Prep and apparently knew Brett Kavanaugh. And she signed that letter, kind of defending his character. She now wants her name taken off that letter after it was revealed in the Georgetown Prep yearbook that he made certain allegations about her.
What do you mean, allegations about her?
Brett Kavanaugh and other members of the football team listed themselves as Renate alumni. Apparently, a crude reference to this girl, Renate. She believes, and others believe, that it is in reference to they all shared a relationship with her in some way, shape, or form. And she said, I didn't know about that being a part of their yearbook or being a part of this joke. Whether they're telling the truth or not, who the hell knows? But she says, hey, take my name off that list now.
Yeah, you know, we want to hear from you, though, on our open mic line. Brett Kavanaugh took an unprecedented step by sitting down with his wife right beside him on the couch, doing the interview and answering questions. Now, it was a friendly audience, but still, he sat there and answered questions prior to this hearing that is set to take place on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
You watched the interview. You heard some of the cuts here right now. We want to hear from you. Did the interview, in your opinion, help or hurt Judge Kavanaugh? Did he convince you one way or another that he's innocent or guilty? But pretty much, did the interview, do you think, did it help him or did it hurt him? 602-200-2733. It's our open mic line. It's open 24-7. It will give you 24 seconds to sound off. 602-200-2733. The open mic line is brought to you by Carol Royce with Keller Williams Realty East Valley.
His yearbook may be his 1983 yearbook may be the most damning thing about him. By the way, he, in his own words, listed himself as the treasurer of the Keg City Club and wrote 100 kegs or bust under it. Braggadocio, being silly, being a 17-year-old.
Or,
you know, revisionist history. I was in the library all the time. I couldn't possibly have gone to parties like that. I was too busy studying. And volunteering down at the old folks' home on bingo night. This has all spawned something called hashtag why I didn't report. Why didn't these women come forward, or any of these women come forward at the time? Why I didn't report? We're talking about it next.
Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes. KTAR News on 92.3 FM.
Happy One Hit Wonder Day. So last week, and he was hardly the first person, but Trump started to, his opinion, I guess you could say, changed on the accuser, at least the first accuser towards Judge Kavanaugh, Dr. Ford, who remembers an event from 36 years ago, and Trump, I'll paraphrase it, basically made a tweet that if it was so bad, why didn't she say something at the time? And it's a common theme, and you've heard it plenty of times with quote unquote age old accusations. Why did you wait a year, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years? Why now? Why coming forward now?
Well, the president's tweet was the impetus for a hashtag. Hashtag why I didn't report.
Okay.
Because I thought it wasn't rape if you were dating. I thought if you didn't want to have sex and he did and forced you anyway, that was just something that happens in relationships. Hashtag why I didn't report. Because I knew it was his word against mine. Because I blamed myself for putting myself in that position. Because I should have known better. Hashtag why I didn't report. Hashtag why I didn't report. I did. But was told that since I have curves, I must have wanted it. I've tried to hide under baggy clothes for years. Folks, those are just a handful of the stories that are being shared right now on Twitter.
And when you say a handful, it would be impossible to go through all of them.
Right.
We're north of a million people have tagged hashtag why I didn't report. A million stories about why they didn't come forward.
Because I was in college, drunk at a party, and I thought everyone would say it was my own fault. I told him no. That should have been enough. Hashtag why I didn't report. Chances are, ladies, if you're in the car right now, something, maybe it wasn't rape. Maybe it was you blamed yourself for being in that position. Maybe it was you should have known better. Maybe it was you didn't think anybody would believe you. But most women listening right now can identify with some aspect of the hashtag why I didn't report.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, this is like the second coming of hashtag me too. This is just the example of what it is that women have gone through for such a long time. And I mean this, guys. All women have some sort of story. It doesn't have to be rape,
mm-hmm.
all right? In every one of those small instances, make us who we are today. Yesterday, I was on Facebook, and I was, you know, just kind of going through the feed, and somebody had posted an article from a magazine some 40 years ago, and it was like this, you know, 12 things women should do before their husband comes home from work.
Oh, my God. Those were these black and white caricatures, Leave It to Beaver kind of America.
Take 10 minutes before he comes home to make yourself look fresh because he's been dealing with people who haven't all day. Make sure there's a hot meal on the table and don't bother him with complaints because he's been dealing with work all day. If he stays out all night, don't question him because work is so hard. That was 40 years ago, and my jaw drops. It makes my skin cringe when I see things like that. I wonder 40 years from now what my grandchildren are going to think about what men are saying in defense of other men. You know, did Judge Kavanaugh sexually assault Christine Blasey Ford? Folks, I don't know.
I don't know.
But to have the President of the United States tweet this, I have no doubt that if the attack on Dr. Ford was as bad as she says, charges would have been immediately filed with local law enforcement authorities by either her or her loving parents. 15-year-olds don't tell their parents about these things.
You know, there is some hypocrisy in this.
Some?
People who are quick to listen to, defend, and support abuse victims who come forward talking about what happened to them in the Catholic Church when they were young. Nobody says to them, how come you didn't say something when you were 12? Why didn't you say something when you were 15? Like, you can't have it both ways, I would argue. And we know there's people out there that are in this boat, Pamela.
Yeah.
It's not a good boat
to be. Hashtag. Why I didn't report. Do you have a story? You're brave enough to share it with us? Because we'd like to hear it. There's safety in numbers. And I know that there are so many women out there that can identify with just some of which I've just explained. I can identify with it. Unfortunately, I can. And I've detailed some of my situations on the air before. It's painful to do. I don't choose to do it again. But you got a story? You want to share it with us? We'd love to hear it. Hashtag why I didn't report. 602-200-2733. It's what we're going through, ladies, and we need to change it.
We have new information out of just how close the Senate race is in the state of Arizona. Yeah, you'll be headed to the polls soon to replace outgoing Senator Flake. We'll give you the latest information on that coming up next.